If you have not been listening to the latest EPP bonus episodes of Real Ghost Stories Online, you don't know what you're missing.
It was so real to me. I could smell him. He was there. And I woke up and it was like he had just left.
GhostPodcast.com is where you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person, to get exclusive access to our once a week bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.
I felt heavy and freaked out. Someone was most definitely watching me.
Complete with exclusive content only for EPP members.
They thought they were mistaken. The house wasn't there. They got out of the truck and stood looking at a large, unattended hayfield.
EPP bonus video only for EPP members.
And I'm like, what kind of sign are you looking for if that's not a sign?
Sign up now at ghostpodcast.com or sign up through Patreon. The link is at ghostpodcast.com. I wanted to hear the answer to, did they find bodies underneath the building?
I did too. I was just sure she was going to say, and then they found bodies.
If you want to hear the best ghost stories we have, along with our regular funny and non-judgmental commentary, become an EPP.
This is a pond created by a giant off rock of the United States. I'm going to guess the translation there is.
Sign up now at ghostpodcast.com. It's only $5 a month, or you can sign up for an entire year. Get 1 month free out of that and a bonus bunk bed bell, so you can ring along at home. Keep Real Ghost Stories Online alive and be part of our exclusive EPP community. Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, a college student experiences a terrifying first year on their own. An apartment that had a former life as a war hospital may not be the ideal place for laying your head down at night. And did the paranormal intervene to help reunite twins separated at birth many, many years later?
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. You can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com or email your audio file to me. Send it to Tony, T-O-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. I want to remind you, EPPs, new added bonus for EPPs. You now get advanced released episodes of our show. As we make them, I post them. And you typically get access to them a couple weeks before they actually go live to the public at ghostpodcast.com or through Patreon. So it's another little extra bonus for our EPP members out there when you just need some more ghost stories. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you once again. And how are you this fine day?
Tony, I'm very good. What about you?
I'm having some disembodied farts over here. And actually, we bring that up because the episode that we had just done, which is, I believe, EPP 209, mentioned disembodied farts in one of the stories, and we didn't even touch on it afterwards because it was kind of in the middle, and I forgot about it till you brought it up afterwards.
Oh, not me. I'd never heard of disembodied farts, and the next time somebody accuses me of farting, they're like, did you just do that? I'm going to be known. Disembodied fart.
Ghosts.
They're around me all the time.
You know, I swear.
Everywhere I go, there's weird farting sounds.
I swear we've had the topic of a ghost fart come up somewhere before. I think it's talked about in some episodes somewhere. So it's not a completely impossible thing, I guess. I mean, nor is like most of the stuff we talk about. But it's you know, it's one of those things you'd think, well, never heard that one before. No, it's come up.
I hope none of my cousins are listening, but I would, if that happened to me, that would be my Uncle Jim, because he was that guy.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have to be like an Uncle Jim. If a ghost is farting around you, that's not like, chances are your mom or your lovely grandmother.
Yeah.
That would be your Uncle Jim, the guy who was in the lounge chair drinking beer all day, you know?
The most disturbing part of it would be if you can identify the individual by the scent. If you're like, ooh, that kind of has a little bean to it, and I'm thinking, I don't know, a little bit of fermented whiskey in there. So I'm thinking that has to be Jim. Yeah.
Well, but it also sounds like a good excuse for someone who farts a lot and they don't want to own up to it.
Just blame a ghost. Just blame a ghost.
The disembodied spirit. The way Spartan.
Hey, it would work sometimes. 855-853-4802 is our number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's jump over to our first story of the day. It says, when I was 19 years old, I just started college as a freshman at a major university in my hometown. I was given the option to either live on campus or rent out a home. Considering it was very pricey to live on campus, I chose to rent out a house for a reasonable and fair price by the owner. It was a single-story old ranch with an upstairs and downstairs, which led to the basement. I'll spare you the rest of the details and get straight to it. One particular night, I just got home from a long day of work and school. It was around 11 p.m., and I decided to watch a bit of TV and scroll Facebook before I went off to bed. In the midst of this, I heard a creaking sound coming from the basement steps. At first, I didn't let it bother me because I knew this house was old and not uncommon to hear creaks and bangs from the plumbing and so on. I brushed it off, but before I could turn my attention back to the TV, I heard shuffling coming from the kitchen. I instantly muted the TV and listened intently in silence. I heard shuffling once more and then the sound of a cupboard opening. I got up, and as I entered the kitchen, I saw all the bottom cupboards were completely opened. My first thought was that someone is in the house. I called the cops, and they searched everywhere, including the basement, and found no one. I was a bit shaken after that incident. A few days went on with no activity until one night in the midst of a really bad thunderstorm, and I mean bad, lightning was constant and thunder booming. I was off from work this night, so right after school I settled down to do some homework, which required me to write a paper. In the middle of me doing my homework, I again heard the sound of a loud footstep shuffling from the kitchen and stopping at the top of the basement stairs. Just then a loud crack of thunder shook the house. I got up from my couch and made my way to the top of the basement stairs and again just listened. I heard a loud thud followed by more shuffling, only this time coming from the basement itself. I turned the light on, which was only a single light bulb, and just as I did, it shattered. I then heard the most terrifying sound I've ever heard in my life. The sound of a child laughing in the pitch black darkness. I could feel the color drain from my face. The amount of terror I felt was overwhelming. To say I was afraid was an understatement. I gathered my laptop and backpack and got the hell out of that house. I drove to a friend's place to stay with him for a while until I could find another place. I don't know what happened to the house since then. All I can say is I feel sorry for the next person who rents it out. What I experienced in that house was all very real and downright horrifying. I never believed in the paranormal before all of this, but I sure as hell do now. Chance. I don't blame them, or Chance, for never going back to that house. I think some would keep, you know, thinking, oh, maybe it'll calm down, maybe I'll make peace with it. I would probably be playing the role of Chance and saying, I'm out, I'm done. You proved it to me, you're here, and that's all I need to know.
Well, especially a kid laughing or crying, and that's creepy.
You could go down the route of maybe it really is a kid ghost, but I would be too afraid that it's something else.
That's just setting you up.
Yeah,
check it out, and then.
I don't know that there's any creepier sound than all in context here, not any time, but a creepier sound of the child laughing that shouldn't be in your house in a thunderstorm with paranormal activity going on. If you were to hear anything, I think that's probably one of the creepiest things that you could have happen.
I don't even know if I could go back and get my stuff.
No, just leave it.
Hopefully, well, and if you're in college, your stuff's not worth anything anyway, let's face it.
That's true.
Because you can go to the garage sale that weekend and get just as quality stuff as what you own.
I'd be afraid something was attached.
Yeah. And then what if you get in a place like that and you sign like a year lease? Then you're stuck.
And that's what, unfortunately, I think a lot of people run into is those sort of situations where it's like, I can't afford anything else. I have to be here. And then they end up enduring a haunting for far longer than they otherwise would. But
I'd have to stay in my car.
I think I would, too. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. The Real Ghost Stories Online. Next letter says, hey, Seth here from India. I'm 36 years old. This incident occurred to me while I was a student at Leeds University in the UK around 2006. Since I was a poor student with not many options, I opted to stay near the university that I was studying in. The place I found along with my friends was a massive mansion built off the Blackstone. It was called Summer Hills Residence. The rent was cheap, but the place was beaten down. It probably was some sort of a stately manor, which was converted to a hospital during World War I period, and then reconverted into an old age home in the 50s. I don't know the complete history of the place. It had around 20 rooms, three kitchens, a massive dining room, and a broken piano, three to four restrooms, and an enormous basement, which served as a laundry room. The thing was straight out of a Tim Burton movie. Anyway, coming to my story, I rented a room on the first floor. I cannot even attempt to explain the plan of this house. You would find rooms at random places, lifts that don't work, and the creepiest part is you'd find stuff like photographs, guitars, and all sorts of stuff that once belonged to the senior people who lived and probably died there. It was weird to look at these personal items, which probably meant a lot to their owners, now lying here like junk. Anyway, my room was on one side of a long hallway. I'm not a sensitive person. I'm 36 now, and this is the only incident that I can call paranormal in my entire life. I was sleeping in my room one night, or should I say, I wasn't completely asleep. It was half awake state. I then have a vivid dream. In this dream, I'm lying in bed in the same room I was in, staring at the ceiling. The best way to explain is that I saw a skull, and the skull had tentacles like an octopus below. It was basically flying, like how an octopus would swim, or perhaps like a jellyfish underwater. Only this one was flying inside my room and tried to land on me. I don't know how I knew, but I knew that this was death. Or at least that's what it felt like to me in an instant. I opened my eyes, and to my surprise, that horrible thing was still flying near my legs. I screamed, "Go!" at the top of my lungs, and the thing was gone. My housemates, who were in the nearby rooms, heard my shout, and they all came knocking on my door. I opened it up. They're probably two to three concerned and annoyed buddies to whom I explained that I probably had a bad dream, but I wasn't sure what really happened. One of the guys who stayed in the house longer than most of us gave a concerned look to me. Later in the week, he advised me to change rooms, which I did. He wouldn't give me any reason. I stayed there for another 4 months and my exams were over. When I was in the process of vacating my room, this same person who advised me to change rooms approached me and said, "That room you stayed in before? There were at least four deaths. Three of them were senior citizens who died when the place was an old age home. The last one happened 3 years back when one student overdosed on drugs and was found dead." So that's my experience. Thank you guys for doing this podcast. Keep up the good work. I'm sensing a theme coming here of college students and housing on today's episode.
Well, because they can't afford good housing, so they take the cheap place because you have to.
Sure, haunted housing.
And it's haunted because no one else will live there.
Yeah.
Oh,
I guess it's good that in the end he kind of got some resolution and somebody gave him some of the story, you know, to it. So it wasn't just always kind of wondering. But I don't know. At the same point, I don't know that I'd really want to know all that.
Well, but I'm with you, though, because I think it is kind of good to know that, kind of confirm that you're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could think you're kind of crazy after an incident like that.
You could. I guess the timing of it was good, too. When you really think about it, he didn't say it like, "Oh, you're in that room where the three people or the four people died." And like that, I could see, you know, that would make the next 4 months, even if you're not in that room anymore, a little bit more or very unbearable if you're very sensitive to everything.
Do you think if you were in college and, you know, because I was really poor in college, mm-hmm. and it was like, okay, this is a pretty great deal on a room. However, four people have died in that room. Like, there's no way going into it you would ever take that room.
Would you? What if you had no options? What if it was literally, you know, you can stay here, four people died, it's a perfectly nice room, or you have your car and that's it. Would you take the car or the room with the people who died in it, not knowing that it's even haunted, but just people have died
there? I might, like, say, could I stay there a couple days before I sign a lease?
Like, do a sample, like a free sample of it, just to see?
Like Airbnb for a couple days, and then I'll let you know.
And if it works, That, I don't know. I think I'd try it, but I don't know that I would last very long. Even if nothing happened, I think my mind would get the best of me.
Oh, I think I'd have nightmares every night, because I would go to bed every night thinking about it.
Yeah. I think I would, too. Good story. Thanks for sharing that. 855-853-4802. Our number next letter says, over the last month, a friend of mine introduced me to your show. And in a previous story, I mentioned that I grew up fairly skeptical, but with a slightly open mind about anything being possible to some degree. When I grew up, my mother always blamed anything from the movies I watched to music I listened to as being part of the occult. So my childhood was pretty dull. Later on, I found out the word occult basically means something complicated. But from a scientific standpoint, point, you look for a rational explanation for it. When I was around Duluth, Minnesota, in a sober living place, I would go to the local YMCA and made a habit out of using the pools and sauna room. I met this Russian guy named Pavel. I'm not sure how it's spelled, and he helped me out with a few things, which was exactly why I stayed at the sober living home. He told me about his mistakes, and I felt comfortable talking to someone who experienced the same things, and he told me that going to the sauna was his way to detoxify his body because he was a heavy alcoholic in his younger days. Soon as I quit doing drugs, I gained a lot of weight, which was also why I felt more comfortable swimming and going around the sauna with Pavel, because he's also a heavy guy and I feel less insecure. He ended up helping me out when my grandpa passed, which was also why he mentioned your show, along with a few others, and he told me that one day I might just get to see my grandpa again, and that life never ends, even when we pass on. Well, I don't have any personal stories of my own. I wanted to share one since he might still listen to your show. I moved from there last year, so I haven't seen him since, but he told me about what was a challenge, something that was challenging for him. He mentioned that originally it was when a woman didn't want to keep her child, but it's also when a child is replaced. Pavel had twin nephews, but something complicated happened where one was basically given up for adoption, so his sister only had one of the boys. The only information known was that they were identical. Otherwise, there were no specific birthmarks or ways to know the other twin outside of a DNA test. I also laughed because Pavel told me he would accuse his nephew of being the evil twin when he did bad things as a teenager, but never when he was younger. His nephew knew he was born a twin, but he told me the kid grew up perfectly fine and loved by his family. This is where things got interesting. His nephew had taken his mother to the ER right after she complained about chest pains. It was a slight scare, but a fairly standard ER visit just to be safe. When they got in the room, she was fine, but she had to stick around for observations, and they had her transferred or registered, I don't know the term for being in a hospital, to the actual hospital for the weekend. The story doesn't quite end there. They had mistaken his mother for another patient that was in the ER room. Here's the strange part, back to the twin thing. Someone was already in her hospital room, which was a mistake, because both patients had the same last name. Due to the severity of the other patient's injuries, his mother was left outside along the hallway while the staff was trying to correct the situation. My friend's nephew was upset and opened the door, and he was obviously hostile with his mother's condition, only to approach several doctors and nurses who hurried him out because the room was designed for surgery and he wasn't supposed to be there. It may be a fortune, some may even call it dumb luck, but they assumed he was one of the family members, especially since they share the same name. He looked exactly like the patient, give or take the haircut or facial hair, but you would assume he was the same person just by looking at their driver's license. He happened to approach the perfect nurse to speak to, who found out they shared the same body, blood type, last name, and birthday. So in the back of his head, he knew that he may have been his twin brother. He didn't hesitate when asked if he was willing to help with a blood transfusion with him. As it turned out, the patient was basically diagnosed incorrectly and spent the last few days internally bleeding. The mistake of his mother being transferred to the room was a blessing in disguise, as it was intended for a surgical procedure rather than being transferred to a room. It turned out that it was his twin brother who was shot after pulling over to the side of the road and helping who he thought was someone with car problems. Pavel told me that God works in mysterious ways, even how maybe his mother's heart was linked to finding the other twin when they were about to die. It also unraveled a few other mysteries from the past. She never had the other child, and she never had the other child intending to be adopted. It was a mistake because of their last names. Much like the hospital mistakes of the room she was in, they had mistaken a child who died as one of the twins. While his nephew was lucky not to be separated from his mother, his twin was given to the wrong mother, which became even more complicated because the parents separated after a paternity test. While the child may have been through many things, both families became far more closer after the hospital experience, and they share the same mothers and father from his nephew, who welcomed them with open arms. Well, I guess it's his two nephews now, but you get the idea. It just seems like the odds of that even being possible is rarer than people winning the lottery. Pavel also mentioned how his nephew's mother's heart pain may be deeper than what it was, because she never had any signs of heart problems since. It's like some freaky accident how it all went down. Normal people would say that the scenario was impossible, yet it happened. So I'm still open to anything being possible. Love the show. Thanks for having it around. So, story where there's not a ghost involved, but that is certainly a paranormal event that occurred there.
Sounds like an episode of Grey's Anatomy. It does. And maybe Shonda Rhimes could hear this and she could write it. But I, you know, those weird coincidence things that happen that it's like, that's almost bizarre that that could be a coincidence.
Sure.
Sometimes I wonder if somebody's kind of moving you as chess pieces and putting you in the right place at the right time for those things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I mean, the odds are so next to impossible. I mean, you got to think there's something that's going on here, and then something's moving something around to have these things line up.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Great. Because the coincidence doesn't explain it. There's
no.
Too many in that story.
Exactly. Great story. Thank you for sharing that with us. And hopefully his friend Pavel hears it if he's still listening to the program. 855-853-4802 is our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi, let's hear yours.
Hey, Tony and Jenny. This is Anne calling from Virginia. I wanted to share with you all an encounter I experienced while on a ghost tour in Colonial Williamsburg. Williamsburg is one of my all-time favorite places, and I love ghost tours, so naturally, when my family and I had the opportunity to spend the night in Williamsburg, we decided to go on a ghost tour. I was really excited about this, so I brought with me a portable camera. Granted, this was about 10 years ago, but it was one of those cameras that required AA batteries in order to function. I specifically remember putting in a fresh pair of batteries before we left the hotel, because I wanted my camera to last the duration of the tour. I was hoping to, you know, take a lot of photos and hopefully catch something paranormal. With new batteries in tow, we went on the ghost tour. One of our first stops was the Brafferton Building, or the Brafferton House, which is on the campus of the College of William & Mary. To provide some historical context about the building, in the 18th century, it once served as an Indian school. And the idea behind that was to take boys from neighboring Indian tribes and educate them, assimilate them into colonial life, and ultimately convert them to Christianity. This did not turn out as well as I planned. Taking boys from tribes kind of exposed them to a lot of things that they weren't used to, and particularly bacteria and germs, so a lot of the boys actually perished because of diseases that they caught once they were moved to the Brafferton House. So a lot of death and sadness surrounding this building at the time. Unfortunately, a lot of the boys perished while they lived there. One boy in particular, as the story goes, haunts the building. The tour guide explained that this particular boy was kind of not a troublemaker, but liked to have fun, sneak out at night, run around, and just kind of explore the area on his own. The boys who attended the school lived on the second and third stories, along with their teachers. And apparently this boy was kind of crafty and would take bed sheets and whatnot, tie it together, and climb out of his room from the second floor. Harmless, you know, just kind of running around, playing around. But one morning he didn't return. So the staff went out looking for him and found his body in the sunken gardens, which is just a little bit further down from where the Brafferton building is. Nobody knows what exactly happened to him. Did he fall? Was he murdered? It's rather unclear. But one thing is for sure, according to the ghost tour, is that this boy still haunts the Brafferton House to this day. The tour guide mentioned that the little boy enjoys playing with young women in particular, playing with their hair, their jewelry, and likes to get his hands on technology if it's available. And I loved hearing this because I was like, hello, young girl, camera, please pick me, like, please show me that you're here and interact with me. And sure enough, the tour guide was going a little bit deeper into a spiel, and my camera just completely stopped working. The screen was black, the lens was extended out as if it was on, but there's nothing I could do to it. I couldn't turn it on, I couldn't turn it off, I couldn't take a picture, the flash wasn't on, nothing. I just kind of was in awe, and at first I was frustrated because I was like, hey, I just put brand new batteries in this camera. Why isn't it working? I'm on a ghost tour. Can you please work? But then it kind of clicked and I thought, hey, this might be the Indian boy playing with my camera. So when that realization kicked in, I just kind of sat there and let it happen. I didn't do anything. I just kind of had it tilted towards the ground, just sort of waiting to see if anything would happen. But at the same time, you know, obviously I wanted my camera to work because I wanted to take pictures while on this tour. Well, sure enough, when we left the area and we were going to the next stop, my camera turned on. And I was so excited because my first thought was, what is on this? Were there any pictures taken? What's wrong with it? Let's figure it out. So I flipped through the photos and there were actually 3 pictures on my camera that I did not take myself. To give a description of them, they all had streaks of light in them, and with each photo, the number of those streaks increased. So the first 2, I'm assuming they were like pointed towards the ground or something because there's really nothing in the background, but there are like yellow, white, and orange streaks. Some of the streaks are solid and some are rather dotted. But the weird thing is kind of in the background is smoke. Now, this was in the middle of summer around 9 o'clock at night. There were street lamps, but they were behind me in the opposite direction of where my camera was pointed. So there's no way any light could have actually been captured on my camera because I wasn't standing near any light. None of the buildings around us were lit. Again, it was nighttime. It was the summer. Nobody was in those buildings. So there was absolutely no reason for any lights to be on. So I was obviously like giddy and super excited because there are these awesome images on my camera with context, that didn't make sense, given the time of day and the fact that there's no light. The last photo is the creepiest one because, first of all, it's pointed, I believe, towards the Wren building, which is sort of the main building on the campus. And I think this because it has a cupola on top, and the Brafferton House and the building across from that, which is the President's House, they do not have cupolas on top of them. My camera, personally, I never had it pointed towards the Wren building, so that's kind of the odd thing about it. Another thing is this photo is completely illuminated with these streaks of light, red, yellow, orange, white, everywhere. There were no lights surrounding this building. There aren't any street lights around the Wren building either because it's a little bit off the road. Yet the building actually looks like it's on fire. And the crazy part about it is this boy didn't perish in a fire. Again, they don't know what happened to him. And the Brafferton building did experience fires, but not during the time of the Indian school. And however, the Wren building did experience quite a few fires, I think about 3. So I don't really know what the deal is with the light and the photos, but I'm thinking maybe perhaps the Indian boy got a hold of my camera and this sort of alternative story was kind of coming to life on the camera of maybe a fire, or possibly trying to tell a story of other people who perished in that fire, or I don't know. I don't know what the connection is. All I know is I did not take any of those photos myself. There was no light. There was no smoke. And I really do believe it was the Indian boy who took the pictures. I would love to hear what you all think about the connection between the Indian boy and the pictures looking like they're on fire, but a really awesome experience. I loved it. My all-time favorite experience involving the paranormal that I've had so far. And also, before I go, I just want to give a shout out to the Grave Talks podcast as well, because as somebody who really appreciates the historical context of haunted buildings, I really love the Grave Talks. So thanks for everything. Thanks for all you do. And thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for sharing that story with us. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what can be done and how people from different times and places can seem to use technology that wasn't around for them to communicate. And they find ways to manipulate it.
Yeah, that's true.
because you'd almost think like, oh, this existed when I was around, so I know how to do this. But that's not the case with so many of these things now.
Which would explain why he didn't take a great picture.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you're also, it's afterlife, maybe you've kind of, you've been messing with other people's cameras for quite a while. I don't know, but I think that's interesting how her camera totally was not working, and then she's got pictures on it.
Yeah, and she kind of wanted to almost raise her hand, like, oh, great, I'm a girl. You seem to like messing with girls, and I have technology, so maybe this will happen. She got her wish fulfilled without it getting, super dark and creepy. She got her perfect ghost experience. Have you ever had anything electronic malfunction or function wrongly that you've been able to attribute to something paranormal or suspecting it?
I don't think so.
No.
I know that once when, where my sister lives in Iowa, and that restaurant she has that I am convinced is haunted. Mm-hmm. I know it is because the upstairs, that it messed with me up there.
Yeah.
But we had a big family dinner one night, and I took pictures of everybody. So they're consecutive pictures. And in one of the pictures, it's an orb, but it's more like almost a white round circle. It's like the brightest thing you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it's like picture, everybody laughing, having fun, then boom, right in the middle of them is one picture that's very different than the other ones. And so I don't know. I think cameras, video is kind of an interesting way that they can also kind of get through.
I would agree. The only time I ever had something not function correctly, and it probably was just dumb luck, it was actually at Graceland. I was trying to take a picture of Elvis's grave, and it was a camera phone, and for the life of me, I could not get the thing to take the picture. You press the button, nothing. It just like almost kind of froze up. I mean, it then walked away from it, and boom, it started working just fine. Now, I'm not saying Elvis was interfering with my camera, but it's the only time I've ever had that happen where it's like, well, that was weird.
Well, if I was you, Tony, you should tell that story that Elvis was messing with your camera because it sounds better. So it's totally Elvis messing with my camera.
100% Elvis.
Exactly.
There's no way that it could not have been Elvis. I just thought that was funny, like the one spot that this happens. Like, well, that's I got a story now for Graceland. But there you go. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. And that is going to wrap up today's program. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you're not an EPP yet, sign up to V1 at ghostpodcast.com or through Patreon. The link is there at ghostpodcast.com. EPPs get bonus episodes of the show every single week and access to advanced episodes before they go public. As we make them, we post them. So you get shows weeks before everybody else as an added bonus there over at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.